David Hawkins is editor of Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call and author of Hawkins Here, blog and column. David, first of all, as always, thank you for being kind to us and showing up. We appreciate it very much. I wanted to ask you about how Donald Trump is doing in the polls. What I'm hearing is his polls are going lower. Is that right?
They are going lower. He took office as the freshly inaugurated president with the lowest approval rating in the history of, you know, modern polling or consistency of polling. The Washington Post ABC News poll goes back to Carter. He was lower than that by a whole lot. He was at 40, the low 40s. Obviously, got 46% of the vote last November. He was in the low 40s on Inauguration Day in terms of approval. That was way lower than any other new president. Number two on that roster was George W. Bush, and he was in the mid 50s at Inauguration Day, despite his contested election. And since then, yes, the negatives have gone up and the positives have gone down. The White House doesn't like talking about that. The White House is now referring to these polls as fake news polls.
Yeah, like a rigged election, yeah.
Yeah, you know, like a rigged election, fake news polls. I mean, it's, you know, Hall of Mirrors time. They're kind of unambiguous about it. You know, it's a little bit like with the unemployment rate last week. Donald Trump ran by calling the Labor Department's statistics on unemployment a hoax and totally fake. And then when the first unemployment numbers came out and they showed 225,000 new jobs and an unemployment rate of 4.8%. He said, "Oh, that's great news. I'm all for it. This is thank goodness the Labor Department's keeping track of this stuff." So numbers that he likes are good. Numbers that he doesn't like are fake news. I mean, it's kind of simple.
It is amazing. Do you think, David Hawkins, you've been around for a while, and I guess I want to ask you this. I think that Saturday Night Live has just been devastating for Trump and for the people around him. How much do you think that kind of stuff helps or hurts?
You know, I don't think it helps. It certainly doesn't help so long as the White House itself does not figure out a way to play along or to be gracious about it. And at least initially, they really have not. Obviously, the president has been sending out tweets since before the election saying Saturday Night Live is terrible, they're fake, nobody's watching it, ratings are terrible. Again, very little of that is true. Then Mr. Spicer endures one of the great send-ups from Melissa McCarthy. He has a hard time being gracious about it, and then we learn the next day that the president is furious. Not that so much that Sean Spicer, his press secretary, is being made fun of, although that's a problem in and of itself, but that the person chosen to portray him was a female. That seems to be what's really getting under President Trump's skin. So, you know, until they can figure out a way to sort of co-opt it, show a sense of humor, be a little bit more self-deprecating, I think it is going to hurt them. Saturday Night Live is not just the province of deep blue America, like, you know, where you're sitting right now and where I am sitting right now. People in the red states watch SNL. People who are, you know, non-college educated whites not watch SNL. And over time, it can bore into the public consciousness and set a narrative. And if that narrative is that Sean Spicer is, you know, off his rocker and not ready for this job, that's, for one thing, not good for Sean Spicer because the president will probably consider cutting him loose. But it's just not good for the administration's already challenged credibility problem.
Now, Steve Bannon is a big problem, I believe, for a lot of Americans. He's been portrayed negatively on Saturday Night Live, too. In the beginning, I guess I got it wrong. I thought they were going to find this guy who was way out on a limb. An office close to the president says, "Look, everybody, we did what we should for him and never hear from him again." But there are those people who are now saying he's running everything.
You know, there are indeed, and it does seem as though it's really a very tiny group, at least as you and I are talking now. It's a tiny, tiny group of who's in the inner circle. There really are essentially only six people. There's Steve Bannon, there's Reince Priebus, the former party chairman, there's Kellyanne Conway, there's the other Steve Miller, who is sort of the policy guy, and then there's the president's daughter and son-in-law. Those six are the super inner circle, and you really cannot run the executive branch of the government, unless you broaden the broaden that inner circle, have more people making decisions, have more people doing the vetting. So you got to think that over time, there will be more people vying to be in the inner circle, and that Steve Bannon's preeminence among those six, seeming preeminence, or at least if not preeminence, then certainly solid standing, will start to get challenged. But for right now, he really seems to have the president's ear. He seems to, the whole sort of notion of being disruptive and not doing things the old way, that Trump seems to like that and be giving that to Bannon. And so listening to Bannon very much first among equals.
Well, now that we have you and you're really up close to the senator from New York, Chuck Schumer, there have been a lot of people who think that he's between a rock and a hard place.
Oh, he's been between lots of rocks and hard places about, you know, you were talking about when to, how much to confront,
yes,
to confront and when not to.
Yes.
It seems as though he, at least as we're talking right now, which is at a time when we're going through probably the two toughest cabinet confirmations for Donald Trump, Betsy DeVos to be education secretary, which required a vice president to show up to break a tie for the first time in American history, and now Jeff Sessions for attorney general. In both cases, the Democrats cannot stop either of these because it was the Democrats themselves who decided to do away with the filibuster on cabinet secretaries.
Yep.
But it is that they are doing lots of histrionics, all-night speech-making. And what choice does Chuck Schumer have but to let that happen? The big rock in a hard place will come up when it comes to Judge Gorsuch for the Supreme Court. There are two very different schools of thought on this. I actually wrote a piece the other day arguing that my sense of it is that more and more Democrats want to tear the bandage off right away, confront Gorsuch, say that turnabout is fair play and that the Supreme Court seat was stolen from President Obama, and that they're going to mount an intense blockade right away and force Mitch McConnell to do away with filibusters on Supreme Court justices. The countervailing view is that Schumer will hold his fire, knowing that Neil Gorsuch, the judge from Denver, who would replace Antonin Scalia, it would be a one-for-one trade. A very conservative guy for a very conservative guy. No point in burning down the Senate and the filibuster right now. Wait for the second nominee, who would presumably be more of an ideological tilt, and just wait and do it then. I think they're going to end up coming down on the former side, and I think that probably Schumer is going to see that his caucus wants to do this and go down that road.
And the nuclear option, the so-called nuclear option, you only have a minute there, David. The Democrats, again, were responsible for reducing it with the other judges, but not the Supreme Court. But all that McConnell has to do is snap his fingers, right?
Not quite. He can't just snap his fingers. He would have to get all of at least 51 of his 52 colleagues to go with him. In other words, if two or three, if it take three of his colleagues spurn him and say they don't want to invoke the nuclear option, then he could not. One person to keep an eye on, who I don't know if some of your listeners get as far into Maine, but Maine's Susan Collins would be one of the ones that that Mitch McConnell might have a hard time corralling.
It's always great to have our friend and mentor, David Hawkins, on the Congressional Corner. David is editor of the Congressional Quarterly's Roll Call and author of the Hawkins Here blog and column. Thanks, David, for being with us. When we come back the next time, I'll give you a whole bunch of other things to talk about.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Alan.